Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna.
That is caught! Touchdown! Oh my gosh! How did that happen? He got it from 59 yards away for the win!
Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Community First Credit Union, Carrie Limousine, Wachovia, Sunny's Barbecue, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
Good evening and welcome inside the broadcast studios at Everbank Field in Jacksonville for Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna, only here on News Talk Radio WOKV. Brian Sexton with my broadcast partner Jeff Lagerman. John Osher, the senior writer at Jaguars.com, is taking a seat. Joe Fortunato on his feet waiting for your calls. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Don't forget Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars and at Jags Voice on Twitter. Always, you can communicate with the show. Hey, guys, how are you tonight?
Good. Good. How are you, bro?
Eventful day in the NFL for both the players and the owners. Or was it? There was a court hearing today with Judge Susan Nelson in Minneapolis. Let's get your thoughts. Here's what we know. It will be a couple of weeks, whether you think that's two or three or whatever, before she comes back with any sort of ruling. John, Jeff, thoughts on what transpired today from what you know?
Well, you know, I was hoping that at the end of the day that we would have some type of ruling instead of, you know, hey, I'm going to take this under advisement and then I'll issue a ruling in a couple of weeks. And that was the term couple of weeks. Rich Eisen on NFL Network keeps using 2 weeks. That's not the case. Her words were a couple of weeks. What this does, I think, is it stretches out the time frame to where one side that loses is going to appeal, and so we're going to have a couple of weeks for a ruling, and then we're going to have an appeal one way or the other, and then we're going to have another couple of weeks for the ruling on the appeal. She, Judge Nelson, strongly urged mediation, federal mediation.
Like they were
in
doing
this case
in late February, early March.
But here's the big question, Mark, and you have two different perspectives on this. From the player side, they're viewing it as that this mediation is mediation towards a settlement to this lawsuit, and that the players have been irreparably harmed, and that the lockout has hurt players financially. And so that the players think that this mediation is a settlement to the lawsuit. The owners are saying that her words mean get back to the bargaining table to try to solve this on your own, the labor issue. So you have two interesting perspectives. Obviously, the attorney for the owners, Mr. Boyes, I believe his name is pronounced, feels
David
that
Boyes.
Yeah, David Boyes, that that mediation is more directed towards the labor issue, whereas Mr. Quinn, Jeffrey Quinn, the player's outside counsel, believes that it is towards a mediation settlement of the lawsuit. So it's interesting that you have just a statement issued from the judge and that you have two completely different perspectives on what that means.
Also, there's the thought that David Boyce argued that the lawsuit was being financed by the Players Association. So even though they decertified, it still looks like a union, so this decertification process is still a sham.
Well,
and that's what they're arguing for the National Labor Relations
You can
Board.
Clearly tell that's what the argument is, and from listening to one of the sports law experts, you know, the league wanted the National Labor Relations Board to issue a ruling that this supposed, you know, decertification is a sham, and that his feeling was, from Judge Nelson's, was that she wasn't going to wait on the National Labor Relations Board's decision on that. So I don't think now we don't even look to see or to hear any information from that organization, and that really the focus needs to be on Judge Nelson's decision. But it was very clear when you watched the post-hearing comments from David Boyes that he constantly used the term union.
Yes, he did.
And you can tell that was, you know, on purpose, and that he never said association. He did when he mentioned that, you know, briefly. But he constantly referred to the players as union, which to me is, you know, at this point, that's not what they are. It's a little, I guess you could say, it's a little luring, you know.
And he said they're acting as a labor entity, a fully formed labor entity, because they fund the litigation and have set up other services for the players, you know, helping
well,
with
Well, that's his opinion, and that's
and stuff,
obviously
right.
an argument that they have presented to the National Labor Relations Board. Now, what to make of this? to me, you know, the next date that we really look towards, because we all look to this date prior to today, is that we look forward to some date in a couple of weeks. And then once we get to that point, and I think that it can get resolved in a couple of weeks, but only if there is some type of settlement. If we're not waiting a couple of weeks to get her decision and then, okay, now we know what's going to happen and that's the end of the deal. We're either going to have a settlement of some kind, whether it be labor or this lawsuit, in a couple of weeks. And if we don't get that, we'll get her ruling, and then we've got a couple more weeks after that with the appeal.
Yeah, and I think the most interesting thing today, and Jeff, we talked about it before we went on the air, there seemed to be reports, and I'm not sure how solid we saw anything, that she's having a tough time with the idea that help me out with that.
Yeah, that the lockout is legal considering the decertification.
Right, and those comments
and those aren't
reports,
really her words,
but those were the reports and
the opinions of the experts
that
were in
the
courtroom.
The consensus. And if that's the case, then as we talked about beforehand, that's not a good thing for the owners.
No.
So,
well, and Greg Bedard is a reporter for the Boston Globe. I don't know whether you know him or not.
I don't know whether he's a sports guy
or whether he's a business legal reporter, but he reported what we just talked about, and that is that she was having difficulty with the idea that the lockout is legal based on the decertification. And he also tweeted this, that the judge made her feelings clear. This is a matter that should be resolved. A lot of folks are impacted.
And, you know, again, strong words. And I think we're going to see more of that sort of analysis and sort of a consensus build in the next few hours as people who were there sort of have time to digest what they heard while they were there. That's usually how these kind of stories play out.
Yeah, to me, I don't know what to make of this. You know, I mean, I was really hoping that we would have something, you know, to sink our teeth into, you know, one way or the other today.
Right.
You know, I mean, this date, I mean, I was waiting for this date. You know, can we get some type of resolution? Can the two parties get some directive from a judge that clearly both sides have lost, you know, a mutual path that they can agree upon, and we just didn't get it.
Do you think
were my hopes too high? Maybe, you know, but it is what it is.
Just my sense, and I've read some things and listened to some different attorneys. My sense is now that we'll hear a ruling from her. I mean, we're already a week in. A couple of weeks to me says the 1st of May. Getting into the appeals process in the appellate court will not be instantaneous. I think now we're looking at after Memorial Day, unless the two sides get together and work out an agreement amongst themselves.
Well, and if the two sides still have the two different perspectives that I've talked about, and that one side believes the mediation is for the settlement of the case, and the other side believes that the mediation is for bargaining, it's not going to happen in 2 weeks.
No.
You know, and maybe those are words, you know, that were used, you know, post-courtroom, just, you know, stating strong opinions, and maybe behind closed doors other opinions are formed or felt. You know, I don't know that.
But you still got to be thinking, too. I didn't mean to interrupt, Jeff, but you've still got to be thinking, too, there's the other X factors of the ticking clock of the players needing money on an individual basis and the owners wanting to get this deal done. And that's kind of going, you know, I still believe that's going to keep pushing them back to the table at some point.
Well, and you know, a lot of people have brought up this issue with players needing money, and I know that's the case with some of them, mm-hmm. because some of them have, you know, roster bonuses, et cetera, that are due. But it's sad that they do need that because of the amount of money that their paychecks don't come in the springtime.
Well, the median
their paragraph five checks come
in the fall.
The median
salary, median now, folks, understand that's where it falls in the middle, is $770,000 for an NFL player today. The minimum for an undrafted rookie is $325,000, and the average is almost $2 million. But obviously you got guys like Peyton Manning and Tom Brady that drive it up.
But, you know, to counterpoint what John brought up about the players needing money, hey, the league needs this time period to sell tickets.
No question.
And that cannot be easy right now.
To go about their business. That's real. To sell advertising for this show, to sell sponsorships for game day, to sell club seats, and then also corporate packages. I mean, that time is needed. You know, all of this is just delaying that. So it hurts the owners, too,
both sides,
as well as
both
the players.
Sides.
So
it just, is, just a sense now, and I haven't been to the Team Teal, but I've heard some reports that, you know, the crowds are not. Last year we heard the word exceptional, and this year I've heard okay. And I asked one of the people that sells advertising today as he was walking out and I was walking in. I said, how's it going? He said, well, it's no trouble to get in front of people. He said, the problem is getting people to allocate their dollars. He says, you can tell them you'll get your money back if you won't, but they've got to allocate their advertising budgets, which means that they're making a conscious choice to put it in Jaguars, and what if there isn't a season? See, then maybe they've missed the opportunity for something else.
And Brian, to make your point even clearer, and it was clear, I'm not trying to criticize what you're doing. You know, for example, you have sold radio.
Oh, I have.
Joe, you sold radio. So have I. Most of these budgets that you talk about are predetermined, okay? And if all of a sudden you can't get into that budget now, it may be too late later.
Yeah. Well, and from a national perspective,
because it may get spent.
Right. How about that? How about college football? You think college football will benefit if there's a lockout from advertising dollars?
Sure. Absolutely.
You bet. So will NASCAR. So will the second half of the golf season because these national media buys.
Baseball playoffs.
Exactly.
You know,
hockey, the start of the NBA season, they'll all benefit.
I mean, they will come back. But, I mean,
for this year, there's a loss.
Could lose a substantial amount of revenue
allocated now.
Because of that.
All right, let's take a break. More to come. Jaguars this week. Twitter at Jags Voice. Facebook.com/Jacksonville Jaguars. And, of course, 800-355-6351. You're listening to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it. All right, here we go. More Jaguars This Week. We've got news coming up in about 6 minutes. So let's grab Don on the north side at first call of the night. Hello, Don. Welcome to the show.
Good evening. My problem is with what you were saying about the judge and the whole business of lockout. Now, it's possible that I don't understand how the NFL uses the term lockout, but it seems to me that she's shifting the focus of this whole thing to the subject of property rights. If I go to work for your station and you say, oh, okay, you can come on our program, and I agree to do it, and then I decide, no, I don't want to do it. I don't want to come on your program. You have a perfect right to bar me from the station. That's a lockout. Now, after we settle a problem, then we'll go to work for whatever we agree on. I mean, I'm very disturbed by that all of a sudden we're all going to be talking about lockouts when that isn't what the problem is. The owners of those football teams have a perfect right. If you don't want to come to work, you can't come on their property.
Well, you see, now here's where maybe the disconnect is, and I'm not a lawyer, so please don't take this as expert analysis, but the players are telling the owners, hey, we've got a contract. We signed it. We want to come to work. You're keeping us from coming to work by shutting down the operation. Therefore, you're hindering our contractual right to earn a living. That's what they're saying with the antitrust lawsuit, because what they're saying is you guys control professional football.
Because they've decertified.
Right. Because they've decertified as a union, so as individuals now they can say, we can't go to work. You won't let us go to work. You're monopolizing football, and that's impairing our right to make a living. It's damaging us. That's what the players are saying.
I understood they weren't even coming to camp or anything else.
Well, and that's because the owners have closed the doors and said, you can't come. That's what a lockout is.
So they want to work out and all this.
This is not a strike. A strike is when the players say, we're not coming. That's a strike. A lockout is the owner saying, we're not going to do business as usual under the terms of the contract. You can't come to work.
Oh, all right. Thanks for clearing that up.
All right, Don.
Well, there's one piece of information we can at least
provide. I mean,
it
is confusing because I think that certainly the players have a perspective, the league has a perspective, and the league certainly downplays that there is a lockout. They really kind of have played up that, hey, the players walked away from the collective bargaining table. And so some people get the impression, well, the players walked away, they're striking. Well, that's really not accurate in that they were collective bargaining, and it wasn't going to where the players thought that there would be a resolution. The players said, okay, we've passed the point where the collective bargaining agreement has expired. You're going to lock us out. We have chosen now that we're going to decertify so that you cannot lock us out. Well, the league has said you're locked out. We're not recognizing that you're an association now instead of a union. So it's a little complicated, but it is understandable, you know, from both sides' perspective. You know, I mean, I've said this many times. I understand the league's argument that they want to have some way to figure out cost when it comes to the revenue split. And I understand that. And I also understand that the players liked the deal that they had. You know, the real, I guess you could say, I don't want to say a wrench, but something that added on to that, too, is the retired players that were part of that hearing today, and that the retired players are saying that this lockout is causing them harm because of the funding of their various retirements, et cetera. And I'm not as well-versed in that particular part of today's events as I am about the other part. But I certainly need to read more on that.
And you'll hear more on that. Carl Eller is the guy who is in court today for them. And obviously Mike Ditka was part of a group that was trying to bring the retired players, especially from that era, and their plight forward. So,
I know that there was a ruling not too long ago that they were going to stop funding, I guess, some of the retired player benefits, and they made a ruling and said, no, you cannot do that. I don't know all the specifics on that. But to me, that should be untouchable, in my opinion, being a retired player.
I just kind of wonder.
You wonder how that kind of conclusion came about. Yeah.
I just kind of wonder if now that maybe more players, like owners probably understood it from the start, now that everybody's sort of starting to realize what we talked about in the last segment, that this thing is not going to get decided April 6th, that it could be April 28th.
June 1st.
May 5th, June 1st. I just wonder if that won't spur the sides to start looking at this. Okay, we got to do something at some point now. It's not going to be decided April 6th. It could continue extending and extending. If what we talked about with both sides starting to feel a financial pinch, if that will start to come into play a little bit as the coming days play out. I don't know the answer, but you do wonder.
You know, the disappointing thing is I was today had some time to watch Fox News, and when I was watching it, I don't know the accuracy of these reports, but they were talking about game day events have about a $20 million to $30 million impact for that host city per game.
Yeah.
And for this city's benefit, I mean, that's a huge impact.
You just have to think about the money spent on game day.
I mean, you just don't want to see that happen.
Right.
You know, you don't want to see that economic impact to this city here in Jacksonville.
And people think about the coaches and the players. You know, you and I are impacted by it if the game isn't played. But think about the guy who sells popcorn up and down the aisles, who makes a living, or doesn't make a living, makes ends meet, right? The parking attendant. I mean, there's a lot of people that are in an ancillary role that are negatively impacted by this.
With, you know, the security shirts and hats, souvenir places,
the
that
concession
sell
stands,
all
of
the
right
restaurant business, I would assume.
Absolutely. How about the parking lots that are privately owned around here? Sure. And the guy who over on the other side of the bridge probably makes his mortgage payment a couple of times a year based on people paying $25 to park in his front yard.
Well,
that's economic impact that isn't even taken into account.
No, you know, and then if you don't have the games and you know, obviously the money is not being spent for different ads, et cetera, around the stadium
there
here.
Are people in sales
which,
that don't get commissions.
You know, when it's known, I mean, if people don't spell money for advertising, their business is impacted because people aren't hearing that message. And then also, I mean, the simple fact, I mean, hey, we all know players aren't very good with their money. They don't inject that money back into the economy.
I'm going to stay away from that comment, but
I can go there.
Yeah, you can certainly go there. And Hunter Hill, by the way, Hunter Hillenmeyer, the former Bears linebacker, who is a member of the executive board, was on a radio show on one of the satellite radio stations with why can't I think of his name? The former Jim Miller, the former Bears Steelers, and he was here for a time in '97. And he made the comment just point blank. He said, hey, look, it's no surprise. It's no shock to what people when I say that professional football players don't all take good care of their money. So even they're admitting that. So with that, it's time for news here at the bottom of the hour. More to come. Jaguars, we talk football in the next half hour? Done deal?
I want to know who John's going to pick in the Jaguars pick for the Jaguars.com draft.
Already done. Already done. But I
haven't seen it yet.
Reveal it next.
Here we go. News is next. Welcome back. Second half hour now of Jaguars This Week, brought to you by Aetna. And become a part of Jaguars Advantage, folks. It's the new Jaguars fan loyalty program. With Jaguars Advantage, season ticket owners can earn up to 15% cash back at hundreds of their favorite online retailers. For more information, go to JaguarsAdvantage.com. Sexton, Loggeman, Osher, Fortunato. Feel free to join us, 355-NFL1, 800-355-6351. Okay, let's have it.
Well, the readers and the senior editor combined picked Ryan Kerrigan, you know, the defensive end from Purdue. And I think overall it's a pretty good pick, considering he seems to be a character guy. He's a high motor guy. You know, Jeff, I know you don't follow the draft, you know, the pre-draft stuff that much, but
I've been reading up on it a little bit this year, John.
Yeah, I mean, he seems to be a fit, and I'm not a big mock draft guy. I'm not a big pre-draft guy just because I don't know that the speculation usually adds up. But this guy does seem like if you had to make a pick for the Jaguars, he makes some sense.
Yeah, and how many different names really got some good support from the readers?
Well, there was a lot of support for Christian Ponder. I mean,
okay.
I wouldn't call it Tebow-level support from last year.
No,
but
wouldn't reach that.
You know, and a lot of it was pretty well thought out. He is a pretty good fit on paper. And again, you know, Gene doesn't reveal to us his draft board, and I wouldn't want him to, frankly. But, you know, Christian Ponder makes sense. Cameron Jordan got a lot of,
What position is he?
Defensive end.
Okay.
From California, I believe. And, you know, he got a lot of mention, as did, you know, Mike Pouncey from Florida.
Guard center from Florida.
Yeah, I mean, and they were all pretty good thoughts. And it just kind of came down to where enough people mentioned Kerrigan. He makes enough sense. He is a pretty logical fit. And 9 chances out of 10, he won't be the guy, because I think Gene's a guy who is never going to reveal what he's really going to do in the first round. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him sneak up on everybody again.
John, from what I remember, you didn't override any of these, did you?
Overrode one. I saw it.
There was one early that I overrode. I forget which one it was. And sometimes it's fun to override just because it gets people a little riled up.
Sure.
But, you know, if there's a really compelling argument that makes a lot of sense for an override, then you do it. I mean, now the bottom line is this thing's supposed to be fun.
So basically what I'm really asking is, so what do you think so far of how the fans have picked?
We had a couple of readers who kind of complained today that it was too much like all the other mock drafts out there. And it is a little bit like the rest of them, but I think that's what you get when you get a reader mock.
Because they're reading mocks.
Because they're reading
the
rest of them. And, but I think overall, the goal of this thing for me anyway was to create a discussion and to have the readers sort of have a forum to educate each other and themselves and have it. And I think overall,
oh, I love it. Yeah, that's great.
It's gotten a good feedback, and I think if you've read this every day, you probably come away with a pretty good idea of how some teams might be thinking, and that's about as good a goal as you can set for pre-draft coverage.
Well, for me, I mean, I've been using that as kind of a tool to learn names and,
right,
you know, kind of where they are, and adding, of course, other things that I read, because, you know, I mean,
right,
my mock draft is reader-based too, because I don't, like I said, I don't evaluate college players. But, you know, the whole Christian Ponder, the quarterback from Florida State, he may be next to Cam Newton, and obviously it's a premier position. He may be the most interesting prospect,
sure,
in this year's draft besides Cam Newton, just because last year as a junior, there was talk that he was one of the elite players if he had come out.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had injury issues, performance issues because,
right,
of that this past year. And how much will personnel guys be willing to overlook some of the performance things from this past year as just purely injury issues?
Right. And while you're at it, talk about Jake Locker, because it was almost the same thing. People thought he'd be one of the top picks, and now they're wondering.
And again, those two guys are the clear example, and, you know, you guys have both followed the league enough to know it. There's a lure to that quarterback position on draft day that can override everything else. That, you know, I'm thinking of the kid from the 49ers who got Jim Druckenmiller.
Mm-hmm.
Got taken late in the first
26th
round.
26th overall.
And, you know, the lure of that quarterback position, you know, because it's a fantasy for that GM to grab that because it can change your franchise.
It can
it's a golden
completely
ticket.
Completely change a franchise. There's not another position
right
in any of all professional sports
right
that can impact a team.
So it gets overanalyzed.
By finding the guy
yeah
to play that position. Not on any other position. Because, I mean, you look at all the other sports. I mean, baseball. You got a starting guy. What is he playing every 3 to 4 games?
Right.
Is that right, 3 to 4 games, Joe? I mean, you're a baseball guy. Starting pitcher, 3 to 4
sure
games. He's in the rotation, right?
Not three. Four or five.
4 or 5 games. Okay, so every 4 or 5 games, you got a starting guy who's impacting a game.
Right.
In hockey, a goaltender. But, right. I mean, he can't affect the game like a quarterback. And, you know, the perfect example that I always look to, John, and correct me if I'm wrong, but, I mean, I look at the Indianapolis Colts.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see a real strong roster. And certainly with the New England Patriots over the last couple
right
years, when they have been in that transition phase, their quarterback has made them an elite team.
The quarterback on those two teams, you know, this is too simplistic to say, but it's close. They'll get you to 9 every year.
Absolutely.
And if you can get a few more, you've got 12 and you've got the division.
Absolutely.
You know, that's sort of – and that's not a scientific thing, obviously, but – it's pretty close. You know, those guys are going to keep you in games. They're going to get you close at the end. They're going to get you in contention.
And especially nowadays, I mean, with the way the league rules have changed.
Right.
I mean, back in the 80s, the quarterback impacted the game, and certainly in a big way, but not at the level that they
right
impact the game today because of the way the rules have changed
right
over the last, you know, 15 years.
Right.
I mean, it's a quarterback passing league now, and if you can find the man
right –
he has that much more of an impact on the game.
And I think the intriguing dynamic about quarterback, and it's probably changed in the last 4 or 5 years. For a while, when you were taking quarterback in the first round, it sort of seemed like you had to get that guy in the top five. And even when you got him, it was going to be a couple of years before it really panned out. And you know, everybody knows I covered Peyton, but that was sort of the classic example. Got him in the first round. I mean, I got him number one overall. And then the second year sort of came to fruition. Well, now lately, Flacco sort of came out of nowhere a little bit, was not that top tier, you know, top five guy when they drafted him.
Yeah,
you know,
Roethlisberger.
The kid from Tampa. Roethlisberger was
in his first year. Yeah.
Matt Ryan came along. You can get him a little later in the first round, and they're making a quicker impact. So it's sort of, again, maybe the dynamic on draft day has changed for, you know, a little bit for these guys. A guy like Ponder or Locker. Maybe they do come in and are able to make a quicker impact than anybody really imagined 3 or 4 years ago.
You know, along those same lines, I don't know if you guys read David's comments about him saying that he expects the Jaguars mm-hmm to draft a quarterback. I give David I think David deserves a lot of credit for the words that he spoke about the Jaguars possibly drafting a quarterback. And I don't think it was to you. I think it was to the newspaper.
Wasn't me.
The
I can tell you that.
And
that's true. Yeah,
I appreciated his comments, you know, because a lot of players, you know, sometimes think, you know, they don't need to draft the guy. They got me, you know, and he was very upfront and and I thought very humbled in his comments, and I appreciated that from him.
And do you think that
I thought they were classy?
It's easier for him to say that because both Jack and Gene have said you're the man no matter what.
Yeah, publicly, but, you know, I mean, the quarterbacks sometimes, you know.
That doesn't change it.
No, it doesn't change it. But, I mean, but even if he didn't believe it, just by him saying that,
yep,
I appreciated that and I think the fans should appreciate that, too.
All parties seem to be handling that about as well as it can be handled right now. Yeah. I'd say
and I thought that was exceptional. He said all the right things.
We need a break. Let's take it now. When we come back, we've got Paul, John, and Bob on the phones waiting to weigh in. Jaguars this week on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. All right, again, you can be a part of Jaguars Advantage, the new Jaguars fan loyalty program. With Jaguars Advantage, season ticket owners can earn up to 15% cash back at hundreds of their favorite online retailers. For more information, go to jaguarsadvantage.com. Also want to put this one out there. Season ticket holders probably get a phone call tonight if you haven't already, but I'm doing a fan forum tomorrow night with Wayne Weaver in here. So if you are someone who gets called because you're a season ticket owner, and you want some insight into what's going on, you can expect it tomorrow night from Jaguars owner Wayne Weaver. Okay, here we go. Some phone calls, and we'll start with Paul on the south side of town. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you. The question earlier about the lockout and the strike and how, Brian, you answered it without rendering a legal opinion or anything got me thinking is if the union's decertified, there's no collective bargaining agreement now, why wouldn't the owners be able to negotiate with the individual players, sign them to whatever contract, not share a certain amount of the revenue, and just proceed on now that the union has decertified and there's no longer a collective bargaining agreement in place? Then they wouldn't be antitrusting, or would they be antitrusting because there's...
If they tried to lower the amount, then obviously...
Players have contracts. They wouldn't do that.
Well, I mean, what he's talking about is the guy's a free agent.
Oh, okay.
You know, owners could say, well, we're not going to pay that much money anymore.
Right.
Well, here's the issue with that.
Collusion.
You got 32 owners, and if they do that, then it's collusion. Then the player would have, obviously, a right to sue. And here's the other thing. You got 32 owners. And you're going to have one that says, you know what, I want to pay that guy a little bit more because I like him. He's pretty good. Yeah. And then it's not going to work, you know. So,
and plus, the players are sticking together on this one. You know, 2-3 guys come in and sign contracts. You wouldn't have enough players that would cross.
Hey, the solution is eventually reaching a collective bargaining agreement.
You have to have it.
Now, whatever vehicle it takes to get to that point, whether it takes litigation, whether it takes negotiation, that's the ultimate thing that has to happen.
I read, and again, we're reading all kinds of things right now, but I read that one of the points the players are pushing forward, and it may just be a negotiating position, is the disbandment. That's not the right word. The absence of a draft.
Mm-hmm.
Because
the dissolution of the draft.
Yeah, the dissolution of the draft, because they would like players to be able to go and sign with wherever they want to sign.
You would have free agents coming out of college.
Exactly.
It comes up with every
CBA.
Every time this sort of thing happens, that comes up.
Well, and by the way, that's why they have a collective bargaining agreement, because the draft is in and of itself anti-competitive.
Mm-hmm.
They're telling players where they're going to work, and that is against...
It's anti-competitive from an individual standpoint.
Right.
Right.
But it is...
When they collectively bargain...
It's competitive
that the draft
for the league.
Right. Paul, or Pete Rozelle always said... That the reality of it was that the league think the competitiveness is based on that draft, because the teams that finish the worst that year get the best players, and it works down from that. Of course, it's not always guaranteed to be that way.
Can you imagine, though, a league with no draft, to where these guys were coming out of college and were free agents from the get-go?
You better have a salary cap.
Oh, my goodness.
You better have a salary cap then. Because Jerry Jones and those guys are going to scoop up whatever they want.
It'd be unbelievable.
Yeah.
April would be absolute chaos. I mean, and obviously we can talk about it. It just wouldn't work, and it would be the end of.
Wouldn't be good for the league.
It would be terrible.
And then you'd lose a whole nother event that's, you know, gained huge
right.
amounts of popularity over the years. I mean, look at the draft now. I mean, prime time, what, two nights?
Now. It's a right. cottage industry with
deal.
All the websites. It's huge.
The combine's big, for goodness sake.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's terrible.
I mean, I love the draft. I love watching the draft. I don't follow it all leading up to the draft. But when the Jaguars are on the clock, and at the end of day two, because I'm not going to sit there and watch the draft on day two, I love watching the first round. To me, the first round is just, it's killer. But you can't wait to see who they got and start reading about them, you know, reading about the background and where they've come from, what position they are. Because, I mean, that, you know, for all fans, that's what it's all about. I mean,
sure.
That, and for years, you know what? That was the only way you got your franchise better.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, think about it.
No,
I mean, for years and years and years, you know. So,
well, there will be a draft this year for sure. We know that. And beyond that, we just don't know. If you're just tuning in, just to kind of recap in the last few minutes, Court hearing in Susan Nelson's court in Minneapolis today. Expect a decision, a ruling from her in the next couple of weeks. Couple does not mean one, two, or three. It just means couple, and then from there, an appeals process. And, I mean, I think best-case scenario, unless both sides get together, you know, we're looking at early June before we see any real movement.
Who knows? Who knows? And it's interesting kind of reading about what players are doing now. You know, you got Mike Vrabel stealing beer. You got Maurice Jones-Drew. What, another serious XM radio deal he's got going on.
Is that what he's doing now?
Yeah. He actually is doing a show on XM. And, you know, he did one in the fall, fantasy-based.
Yeah.
And now he's doing one on Sirius XM radio and talking to players what they're doing now in the lockout.
Bob's on the phone. Bob, we got about a minute, so what would you like to say about Maurice?
Yeah, my quick question was, what is your opinion about Jones-Drew now being a professional, unbiased media person in his late hit show last night from 8 to 10 p.m., spending 90% of the time bashing the owners? I don't really care much for that as a season ticket holder.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
I just wonder about your opinion, because last year he's the one that, you know, cut the other player like he didn't play the whole season and blamed on the media. Now he's a paid member of the media. So
I'll tell you, I'm surprised.
Hypocritical.
I'm surprised because he's a bright guy, and generally he is an amiable guy, and he knows he's the face of the franchise.
First of all, I would have liked to have heard it before I can comment on it. I've got a rule. If I didn't hear it firsthand, I'm not going to comment on it. But Maurice is a heck of a personality, and I can tell you one thing. Bob, no matter what he says, he would be one of the greatest teammates I would have ever had, because I watched the way the guy plays, and to me, that's what matters.
Well, I was a little surprised when I heard it, and I did hear it.
You did?
I did hear it. I was a little surprised, and because you would think that a guy like that, the franchise has made him their face, that he would remember that at some point, everyone's going to get back on the same page. You don't want to cut the cords.
Doesn't
so
give
thoroughly.
Ratings, though, does it? Isn't that what the media business?
Well, then
is
you
all
might.
About?
Yeah, you're right. Then you might not want to do the media thing during a draft or during a labor dispute. You might want to stay away from it. It's not like he needs the money.
No, well, I mean, you never know. I mean, I like I said, you never know.
If he does, then he has poorly managed it, because he got an $18 million signing bonus a couple of years back.
Well, he's like I said,
he's a great player.
I have watched football for a lot of years, and there's nobody that plays the game.
It's fun.
But more so than the way I've seen him play it.
I'm sure he's got some close advisors and family members that are telling him, hey, you know, you might want to just remember, you all are going to be on the same side.
Bob Labor makes for sometimes crazy statements on both sides.
Yep.
Don't hold it against him.
Yeah, please don't. All right, folks. John, thanks again.
Thank
you. Appreciate seeing you. We'll take a pause for about a week and see you next Wednesday night.